Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning, everybody. From the NovaCare broadcast booth, Citizens Bank Park, with Ray Dinger. I'm Glenn Mack now here for the morning. Into the ballgame as the Phillies take on the Minnesota Twins today in the rubber match of this three-game April series. And, Ray, I come to you... You know, I came to you yesterday asking your level of concern about the Sixers, which was extraordinarily high.
It was higher than Derek Bogner's.
Well, his was a 7, which was high.
His was 7, and I was at 8.5.
Yeah, which is head for the hills. But I'm going to come to you similarly today about something else, which is the Phillies bullpen. And we did talk about this a little bit yesterday, and here we are back discussing it again. Hey, we're only 7 games in. The Phillies are 5-2. Nothing is pushing me off my prediction that they're going to win the division, but we got to look at it as it arrives each day. And as we arrive today after 7 games of the series, David Robertson has an ERA of 12.
Mm-hmm.
It's not 0.12.
No.
Jose Alvarez has an ERA of 13.50. Sir Anthony Dominguez has an ERA of 15.43. I'll throw in Hector Neris. He's got a 4.91, which makes him the leader there.
Yeah.
The bullpen overall has been torched for 13 runs in 7 games. Now, let me say this. On the other hand, Adam Morgan, Nicasio, my buddy Pat Neshek, pitching great, pitching fine. Neshek particularly, pitching really well. Tommy Hunter is out for the foreseeable future with a flexor strain in his right forearm.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ray, I'm going to come to you, and I'm going to ask you, what's your level of worry about this bullpen?
Well, considering the fact that coming into the season, we anticipated it being a strength, and we talked about it being a strength, I'm concerned. If we had come into the season and we had said, geez, you know, I'm worried about the bullpen, and you saw what you saw so far, you'd say, yeah, I understand why I was concerned about the bullpen. Listen, if they really have problems down there, then that will accentuate the questions that already exist with the starting rotation. This team needs their bullpen to be good.
Yes.
And I guess it's a two-pronged sort of thing. Yes, I'm concerned, but I'm also sort of not ready to give up on the idea that I think these guys are pretty good and will get themselves straightened out. Robertson in particular. I mean, Robertson is a veteran pitcher that's been around a while, and there's no reason to think that he's lost it in 1 year. I think it's just a matter of him figuring some things out and finding his groove. And maybe the other night he did. The one that really concerns me is Sir Anthony, who's young, and I'm not so sure now if what we saw last year may have been a mirage.
All right, let me slow you down. Let's take them one at a time, because you brought up David Robertson, excuse me, who pitched fine yesterday. I got here to the ballpark early and was having a conversation with somebody who's very filled in with the Phillies pitching staff and pitching overall. And he said, first of all, the thing with Robertson is he only threw 4 times down in spring training. Now, he should know his own body, and he knows what he can do, and he's traditionally a fast starter, but maybe it was a mistake to only throw 4 times in spring training. Maybe. He also said in watching Robertson the first few outings, he was very short with his stride, which was causing him to kind of spike the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So if he lengthens his stride, he should be just fine. And I think with a guy like Robertson who's been around that long, if it's a really healable issue, which is, again, what was suggested, he'll be fine. So I'm with you on that.
Yeah, that's sort of where I feel about him. I think it's just a matter of him getting more work and getting it straightened out.
Right. You go look at the film of yourself and like, oh, look at this. I'm doing this. Okay. I'll get back to normal. I'll be okay. Sir Anthony, you say is a bigger concern. I share that concern. And here's the thing. I was so high on this kid last year when he came up.
Oh, I remember.
I mean, you remember he threw like the first 15 innings he threw, he gave up two hits, no run. They were incredible stats.
Yeah, he wasn't even allowing a base runner, much less a run.
Yeah, well, the problem is, this morning I went and looked up his stats for the rest of last year, and his ERA in August was 7.45.
Right.
Now, we thought he's tired.
That's what I thought.
The manager had used him sometimes in multiple innings, which, hey, in my world, a guy should be able to pitch multiple innings, but that world, you know, they don't do that in baseball anymore. And maybe he was tired, and maybe he just needed to get some rest, and when this new season starts, he'll be back to that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Not yet.
No.
Again, the person I spoke to today who knows about pitching and the Phillies pitching says he's a great thrower. He's not yet a pitcher.
Right. I believe that.
And I mean, that distinction's pretty clear, right?
I think that's spot on. I mean, that's exactly kind of what I was thinking. I was thinking it even late last year. When it did seem to me, the second half of the year, it did seem to me that there was a fatigue issue. Because during the early part of the year when he was lights out and pitching really well, I mean, you and I both sitting here, right here in this booth said, I think we both said the same thing, Chaz, I hope Gabe isn't burning this kid out. And at the end of the year, it sort of looked like, in my view, that he had. So I kind of thought like you, okay, well, he come back, get an off season, he can rest up a little bit and come back this year and he'll be fresh and he'll be fine. But what I'm seeing with him is, and I guess it may get to the point of what you were saying, but to me, there's no movement on his ball now. I mean, last year, yes, he threw hard, but throwing hard wasn't all of it. I mean, he threw hard, and his ball had a natural movement on it. His ball was it's something you either have it or you don't. And early last season, he did, and then later in the year, it wasn't there, and now I've watched him this year, and I'm sort of seeing the same thing. That the ball, he's still throwing with some velocity.
Not as much.
Not as much.
He's
but
throwing,
I mean,
98 last year. Now he's throwing 95. I know that seems small, but I don't think that's.
Yeah,
that's a
but
lot.
I think. But to me, it's not so much just the fact that it's a couple clicks less in terms of miles per hour. It's just it doesn't seem to have the same movement on the ball. Now, how you regain that, I don't know. That could be a mechanical thing. I mean, you could coach him through it, but. Yeah, he's the one I'm really concerned about. He's the one I'm really concerned about because he has to find it. He really does because the way they're talking, it doesn't sound like you're going to have Hunter back anytime soon.
No, not at all.
And Nishak is very much a niche kind of guy. You can only use him in certain spots. You can't overuse him.
Okay, and I'm gonna change the dynamic. I just want to say one more thing here about Dominguez, which is Kapler said after the game that, and this is a quote from him, he is building up to his full strength. So I guess he's whatever. He needed more spring training. I'm not sure what that means.
That's kind of what he's suggesting.
Oh, okay.
To me, I think that's.
Then get him thrown some low leverage situations so that he can build up to his own strength without giving up a 3-run home run in the ninth.
Yeah, See, I'm a little more concerned about that because this to me is looks so much like the way he finished last year that I just wonder if this isn't an ongoing problem. And maybe what you're talking about is the fact that when he started last year, I mean, he was a total unknown to the rest of baseball. I mean, they had no idea who this guy was. They had no idea where he came from. They had no book on him whatsoever. And by the second half of the year, obviously that all changed. I mean, they had seen him a couple times and. So I think that was part of it. He was no longer a mystery to them. And that combined with the fact that he lost a little velocity and some of the movement wasn't there in his pitches is what showed the dramatic difference. But so far this year, you know, you're kind of hoping this year he would pick up where he left off at the beginning of last season.
Right.
But instead he's come back and he's picked up where he left off at the end of the season.
So, Ray, as we now finish this series against the Minnesota Twins today and the season moves forward, and the Phillies have a lineup that looks terrific, and they're running the bases marvelously, and they're playing solid defense.
Yes, they are.
I can't really give a big endorsement of the starting pitching. Arrieta was okay yesterday. Got hit a couple home runs early, but he hung in. He was okay.
Yeah, no, he pitched okay.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
Okay. Who's closing?
Well, we talked about the fact that Gabe doesn't necessarily build his bullpen along the old traditional lines.
I got that. But right now, other than eeny, meeny, miny, moe, what's his best, what are his options? Because I'm going to go for a completely different one.
Are you rolling Vasquez out there?
No.
Oh.
Velasquez, no.
All right, you tell me.
I'm rolling out, Ray, and there may be a certain irony here. I'm rolling out a guy who's thrown has 13 years of accomplishment in the major leagues and a lifetime ERA at 2.71. Man who has pitched 529 games in his life and saved a lusty 13.
Okay.
I'm going Nishak.
Oh. You know, he doesn't want that, though.
I think you're probably right.
If you ran this idea by him, it'd say,
no, but here's,
nah, I don't think so.
Nah, not going to happen.
Nah, not going to happen.
He doesn't talk like Jody. Here's the thing. Actually, you know what? I will put it on Twitter, and knowing Pat Nishak, he'll respond because he actually reads what people say on him on Twitter and responds, which, by the way, you're a professional athlete. Don't do that. Don't respond to an idiot like me.
Have you told him that?
I've engaged with him back and forth. I've invited him on the show. The timing tends not to work out too well.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully he's a little busy right now and can't do it, but I have invited him on the show. But that's not the point. My relationship with Nishak is not the point. Right now, I agree with you, you're going by committee, and maybe today it's Robertson. And maybe today it's Robertson. And maybe if it's not, it's Nishak.
Mm-hmm.
Because who else would you – let me put it this way. You're up today 4-3 in the ninth inning.
Uh-huh.
You've already run out three or four, you know, Neris has pitched and Alvarez has pitched. You've already gone through five different guys, as always happens. You need somebody to close. Who you want to go to?
If Robertson hasn't pitched, it would be him. I would go to him first.
All right,
you've already used him?
I don't know. No, not necessarily. I'm saying you have your choice. You can go to whoever you want.
I'd go to Robertson.
See, and I'm saying give Pat a chance. I am saying is give Nish a chance.
You know,
everybody's talking about Dominguez. Dude, we could do a whole bit on this.
Well, you surprised. I thought you were leading me down a whole other street.
You thought I was going Kimbrel City.
I thought you were going to tell me Craig Kimbrel.
Right.
Because yesterday we did like a half an hour of the show talking about the idea that people are proposing that why don't the Phillies go sign Craig Kimbrel. And you and I both said, I wouldn't do that, given the amount of money we're talking about. Here I thought you had done the old flipperoo on me in 24 hours.
No, money is only one of three elements why I would not go after Kimbrel right now. Money is one. The fact that he didn't look very good last year to me is another, particularly in the postseason.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I thought he began to slip some. Listen, he was still one of the better relievers in baseball, but that trend is not good with him. And the third one is the guy hasn't pitched since last October. We saw with Arrieta last year, you can't just sign him today and expect him to be here in 3 days throwing a baseball.
Right.
So if you get him now, if you sign him now, when do you expect to see him? May 10th, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't do you any good for the next month.
Right. So, okay, I thought you were setting me up for that was going to be your answer.
I'm not a flip-flopper.
No, normally you're not. So that's why I was a little surprised. But you know what you say makes some sense. Although I know if you proposed that to Nishak, he would probably tell you, no, that's not really my role. So I don't know if he's
whatever they need you to do.
Well, I guess, except if you know he's going to be at best lukewarm to the idea, then how effective is he going to be?
I don't know. Who doesn't want to be a closer?
Him, apparently.
All right, a couple other things I want to get in the open. Did you happen to watch the NCAAs last night?
Watched a little bit of the UVA game. I feel somewhat invested in that.
That was your pick before this whole began. You picked Virginia, and I picked North Carolina. I'm long out. You're right there, Big Ray.
Taking it right to Monday night. Yeah.
All right. So there was a very, very controversial call right at the end of that game, and let's play that.
And Wiley. So here we go. Jerome to inbound.
Oh, they got the lob.
Looking. It's Guy from the corner. From the win. Hold on. Did I hear a whistle?
I'm with the guy who goes, wow.
So was I.
Not sure who he is, but I'm with him. So I want to ask you a couple questions. And most people now have seen this. If you didn't see it live, you saw it on replay. Question number one, was that a foul?
Probably yes.
Question number two. Was that a foul at that time of the game?
No.
Okay. So we believe in situational refereeing, right? We're straight up about that.
Yeah. I mean, I feel bad about this because I've always been one of these guys that's argued that a foul is a foul and a penalty is a penalty, and the time of the game shouldn't matter. I know I've heard myself say that, and now what I'm saying is that probably, I guess, I didn't really believe what I said, because in that situation, was it technically a foul in a vacuum? You look at that play? Yeah, probably. Is it something that if I were wearing the striped shirt, I would have called in that situation? I don't think so, no.
I'm with you.
Oh, okay.
I don't think I would call it most of the time. It was a petty little ticky-tack foul that I don't really think affected much, and I wouldn't call it. I mean, to me, that's one. It's the same argument of you can call holding on every pass play in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And you know when it's really holding and when it isn't. And to me, yeah, that was a foul, but I see that on almost every possession. You can find that if you look for it. I would not have called it at any point, and particularly I would not have called it at that point.
In that situation, no, I would not.
So what ends up happening is a game, which was a terrifically exciting game, is always going to be remembered for the refereeing.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I will say that the refs missed an egregious call on the double dribble.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, everybody in America was screaming at the TVs, like, you picked it up again. He started – like, that was – how do you miss that one?
So obvious.
Which leads to the question of – can we agree, Ray Dinger, that unfortunately refereeing now has so much more impact on sports than it ever did? You can say it's for the quality of refereeing. I think it's mostly because of the camera work is so good. Because we know if you take – and I was thinking about this last night after I saw this. Many people think the greatest play in the history of the NFL is the Immaculate Reception.
Right.
Right. And one of the reasons it's great is because – we don't really know if he caught it.
Right.
We don't really know if he caught it legally. Back then, you couldn't catch a ball bounced off your own teammate, which it maybe might have been. And that play was allowed to stand because, well, there was no replay at the time, and there wasn't the camera work at the time, and so we are allowed to live with that great highlight forever. I'm sure the play was against Oakland. Who was the other team?
It was Oakland. Oakland, yeah. And the Steelers.
Sure, people in Oakland don't like that one any more than they like the Tuck, but, you know.
John Madden could walk in here now and talk for half an hour about that play.
Right. But now, it just seems in every sport, in so many huge games, you walk away going like, yeah, the refs blew it. Patriots fans are still bitching, and this is fine, that there was on the Hail Mary at the end, that the Eagles interfered.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they did, but situational refereeing says, unless you grab Gronkowski around the face mask and tug him to the ground before all the ball gets there, that's like an up-in-the-air free ball for everybody.
Sure. But then there are the people in Oakland that are still saying to the Patriot fans, what are you complaining about? We're still living with the Tuck rule.
Right.
Which is one
where forever officiating will be it.
Right.
Are we at the stage in sports – and again, I think it's more than anything because of camera work. Maybe it's more because of society, you know. Nobody just accepts things that happen. We got to kind of bitch about them. That, I don't want to say every game, but the majority of huge moments in sports will be reflected off of the officiating.
Yeah, I think we're there.
Yeah, it's not good.
I think we're there.
It's bad. It's bad for sports. I got no solution for it.
Right.
You can't unscramble the egg.
Yeah, I mean, I've had this discussion with a lot of fans about, and mostly football fans, but it does go across all lines. I mean, it's all sports have it to one degree or another. But I hear it a lot, mostly from football fans, about the officiating's terrible, the officiating's worse than it's ever been, these officials, what's the matter with them? I don't know that the guys that are officiating the games today are worse than the officials of 30, 40 years ago. I think they're probably not. I think the game, the way the rules are set up now, the game is much harder to officiate. The rules are harder to interpret. The rules are harder to apply because there's so many more of them, and so many of them involve intent, which they didn't used to. And then the other part of it is it's everything has got six different camera angles, and they're all immediately available to the TV viewer. So any kind of a call that's very borderline can be replayed instantly, and the officials held to account. So, you know, I don't think the officials, they're saying, oh, they used to be really good, now they're incompetent. No, the officials, I think, are probably the officials. I don't think that's changed. But I think the way we I think the game that they're asked to officiate has changed, and the way we watch the game has changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a shame because, first of all, the second game last night was a clunker of a game that unless you went to one of those two schools or enjoy bricklaying, it was not a very entertaining game.
Yeah.
But the first game was, and all that will be remembered is that Virginia gets there because of the official.
The second game wasn't much. I'm sure our buddy Ike Reese was on the edge of his seat.
Yeah.
The old Spartan, I'm sure he was on the edge of his
Ike.
Seat in that game.
Yes, yes, yes. 888-729-9494, 888-729-9494. Ray, during the break, I need you to get out a long, sharp knife and a shovel.
Yeah?
We're going to talk about the Flyers.
We
are going to bury that team as it deserves to be buried right here. Okay?
I take no joy in that.
But it really, we don't talk about them, and this is like the last time we'll talk about them for a while. But it's a shameful season that they had.
Yep.
We are at the NovaCare broadcast booth. Phil's Twins coming up a little bit after 1 o'clock today. 888-729-9494. Ray Dittinger, Glenn Mack now. 94 WIP. All right, Ray, before we bury the shame of a fraud, of a mockery, of a disgrace, of an embarrassment that is the orange and black.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to take a call because this fella Gary wants to talk about what we had brought up before, and I don't want him to have to listen past the screed we are about to deliver. Hello, Gary.
Hey, Glenn. It's Gary. How you doing?
Oh, Gary the ref.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. Ray,
it's
a ref.
Oh, here it is. Well, you know, I refereed basketball as long as I did. I've done football, but, you know. But at any rate, it was a call that had to be made, and that, you know, saying that is that you got to let the guy land, okay? You got to let the guy land after the shot, okay? And let me ask both Ray and yourself, Glenn, was he able to land properly?
I guess not.
I would have judged it on, did it alter the shot? The shot's what mattered. The shot either wins or loses the game. And if it didn't alter the shot, then I wouldn't have called it.
Well, I disagree with you. I thought it did alter the shot, especially with the body bump that went into it. Okay, if you see, he hits him with the body, and he tries. He was basically, the defender his momentum carried it into him, you know.
Let me ask you a question without parsing that particular play anymore. And I understand your point on that. Do you, as a guy who's reffed in college, in football and in basketball,
right?
Do you believe there is the concept of situational officiating?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh,
to me, this falls into that.
Oh, yeah. And you know what it is? Is there a gray line? Yeah, it is a gray line. It's like you guys were saying when I got in the car that you can call holding anytime you want, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it's point, as Ray knows, and you too, Glenn, it's point of attack. Where the ball, you know, with football, you know, it's a point of attack situation. And if you don't have point of attack and a hold, you know, you don't call that. What is going to be interesting, guys, with this new rule, okay, the Hail Marys of the world at the end of the game, you know, is it interference or is it interference?
Yeah, they're going to all be reviewed. And we got to run, Gary, but always thanks. And it's going to – we talk about officiating takes over the game. It's going to be that at the end of every football game when there's a Hail Mary, whether it's complete or incomplete.
It's going to be reviewed.
Yeah, the game's not going to end for another 3 minutes as everybody sits around and guys go under the hood. Not going to help the game.
Yeah, the Eagles-Patriots Super Bowl is a perfect example.
Absolutely.
They would have had to review the Gronkowski play at the end of the game.
Ray, I want to run a couple facts.
And I shudder to think of what they might have decided.
I'd like to run a few facts by you and get your thoughts.
All right.
The last time the Flyers went around in the playoffs?
2011?
Peter LaViolette was the coach. Chris Pronger was the captain. Ilya Bryzgalov was the goalie. And I had a head of hair. All right, that was three true statements and a lie, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
They lose yesterday to the Carolina Hurricanes. Boy, was that a barn burner. And afterward, there was a piece, Sam Carcitti wrote a piece, and I'm not attacking Sam on this, but he wrote a piece that said, the players rally for Scott Gordon to stick around as head coach. To which I would ask, and I'll start with you, why in the world would anyone listen to what any of these mutts of players want to be their head coach?
Right. I thought exactly the same thing. And again, I'm not attacking Sam, but I thought exactly the same thing. Why would you even care what they say? You know, we're at this point because of them. So, they're going to set the course for the future, huh? Well, I have no reason to think that if these guys are setting the course, that the future is going to be anything different than the past. So what they have to say means nothing to me. Okay, I'm going to make this determination based on my own evaluation. I thought exactly the same thing. And for over my own experience of many years covering losing teams and being in this situation, not hockey, mostly football, you get to the end of the year and the team's had a terrible season, and there's the question about whether the coach is going to come back. If you ask the players in any sport, the players will inevitably say, oh, no, we want the coach back. Oh, he's great. He's terrific. Because the players would rather deal with the devil they know as opposed to the devil they don't know.
Yeah, new coach is going to kick him in the ass and get rid of him.
Get rid of him. They bring a new coach in here. God, for a losing team, he's going to clean house. I'm going to be out of a job. No, look, I don't think the guy's that good a coach. But, hey, let's bring him back.
Because it's
something familiar to me.
And these guys should be out of a job. All of them should be out of a job, except for Carter Hart. They were 3-10 in their last 13 games. They rolled over and died. You know, they got the new coach. They got rid of the old vacuum of a coach. They brought in the new guy, Gordon. They had a little bit of a run.
Right.
And then they just fell apart and collapsed. And frankly, they gave up. And you hear a guy like Voracek talking. Boy, does he want out of here.
Yeah.
Because you heard him talking all the time about how, you know, his team got off to a bad start and they gave up and we didn't have the hustle, we didn't have the jump in our step and all that stuff. They're dogs. They're mutts. They really are. And I know that people get very offended by use of that statement, but I don't know a better way to say it. It is now 44 years since this team won a Stanley Cup. Now, they had a lot of years after that where they were relevant,
mm-hmm.
where they got to the finals, where they won one of the top point getters in hockey, where they had guys, you know, they went through the Prop, Kerr, Howe era into the Lindros, LeClaire, Desjardins era, and while they may have fallen short, they were a solid franchise. That was Ed Snyder's franchise.
Yeah,
Ed's gone.
Yeah, they were a team that mattered.
They were a team that mattered.
They haven't
mattered
for years.
You are correct. And they are in a city where sports matters more than any other city I know, right? Maybe Philly, Boston, or Chicago are probably the three cities in this country where sports really matters. They don't matter. They are irrelevant. At a time when we have a Sixer team with Joel Embiid that's, you know, a compelling watch, and you have a Phillies team that we're going to watch here today, you know, with Bryce Harper and Rhys Hoskins and Aaron Nola, and, you know, the sky's the limit, and you have an Eagles team that won the Super Bowl 2 years ago, you have a Flyers team that has made itself invisible in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I know the Flyers tend to be the fourth franchise because, you know, fewer people follow hockey than others, but all those years when the Flyers were good, they mattered. People talked about them.
Mm-hmm.
They're the union.
Yeah, they are. They're not far removed from that. And you watch them down the stretch. I mean, that game they played against the Rangers, the last game against the Rangers, that 3-0 loss to the Rangers was awful. And then they followed it up with that performance in St. Louis where they just stood around and watched the Blues skate in and out of them, but they scored 5 goals in their first 6 shots or something. I mean, they completely quit. And, you know, Voracek made a statement, and I said to you yesterday, Voracek looks to me like he's trying to talk his way out of town.
Oh, absolutely, once out of town.
I mean, you know, every time he talks about this, all he does is he rips the team, he rips everything. I mean, he's basically saying, please get me out of here. But A couple weeks ago, he made the statement, well, we choked in a game. He thought, I guess what game did he play against Montreal? He said, we choked. Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if this team choked. I just don't think they're very good. I think it's that as much as anything.
I think lack of skill combined with lack of effort.
Yeah, but that's not choking.
No, you know I understand. I'm not saying they choked, but I think they rolled.
Well, yeah.
I think the whole back end of the season they rolled.
Yeah, but see, I think that the choke suggests that this is a really good team that was playing a big game and wasn't equal to the moment. Well, that doesn't describe these guys.
Okay.
On the one hand, they're not good enough. And on the other hand, they don't always play hard. The idea of choking is probably the least of the three.
And I feel this was such a wasted season. Look, the good news is Carter Hart came up, and you want to believe he's going to be good, mm-hmm. right? He started out great. He had pains, growing pains a 20-year-old's going to have, and he had an awful team in front of him. But let's choose to believe that he's still going to be good.
I believe in him.
Okay. Who else on this team did anything? You talked during one of the breaks – and I'd love you to bring this back up about what happened last night when they gave out the awards.
Yeah, I mean, they gave out the awards last night, which is sort of laughable in and of itself. You got all, and they have this long list. They have like 8 awards that they give out for this awful team. But, I mean, they give out the award for the Barry Ashby Award for best defenseman on the team. And who wins it? I mean, you know.
Radko Gudas.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, talk about speaking volumes. I don't want to diminish him because, look, he is what he is. I mean, he's a guy that tries hard, and he actually is somewhat consistent. But, I mean, you looked at that defense at the start of the year, and you're looking at guys like Gauthier-Spehr and Provorov.
Yeah, I think Provorov might be a top 5 for Norris Trophy this year.
I think he's going to have a chance to win the Norris Trophy this year. Well, and they certainly both have the ability to be all-stars. And yet, when it comes time to pick the best defenseman, you pick this guy, who probably is the fifth defenseman on a good team. Really? In an area where you actually had some players that you thought had some promise, this is your best defenseman over the course of an entire season? I mean, what an indictment. And, you know, as I was watching the game, I mean, I'm so
crazy.
You
watched last night?
I didn't watch the whole game, but I actually kind of watched the third period just to kind of get a sense of, you know,
how does this
end? Who's still playing, who's still trying? And the horn sounds, and they, you know, they lose. And then the players stay on the ice, and they wave their sticks at the crowd, just basically saying thank you. This is the final salute for the few fans that were still left. And Bill Clement, and I really like Bill Clement. I think he's a really good analyst. And, you know, heck, I covered him when he was a player, for God's sakes. But Bill says that they're going off the ice, just kind of, I guess, kind of reaching for something nice to say. Says, well, you know, better times are ahead. For this team. Really? Where do you see it?
I mean, didn't see evidence
of it. To me, I don't look at that roster and see a whole lot of players that, oh, I feel good about this team going forward. I think they are where they are.
Yeah, this is not a trust the process. This is a team that's nowhere.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. You know, you can always rebuild a franchise in sports if you do it right. And maybe some of those young prospects will develop in something. But I just view this as an entirely wasted year for a team that gets further and further away from being relevant. You have a captain now who, you know, God bless him. I have nothing against Claude Giroux, but I'm not sure what purpose he serves for you going forward either.
Yeah. Well, the next big move is the coach. And I don't think, despite the article today and what the players say, I mean, I don't think Gordon has a chance in hell of being the new coach.
No.
So they're going to go out looking. And Joel Quenneville came out a couple weeks ago and said, yeah, I want to coach again.
Yeah, and he's also going to find his best situation.
Yeah, and he's going to find his best situation. You know what I read today, and I guess it was in one of Sam's stories. I was shocked when I saw Joel Quenneville has the second most wins of any coach in the history of hockey.
Yeah, who's for Bowman? Has to be first,
Scotty,
right?
Bowman's number one. He's number two. I would have thought that one of the, you know, like a Punch Imlock or a Sid Abel or a, you know, one
a
of those
of years.
Guys. I would have thought one of those guys.
Yep. All right, we got to go. We'll talk about that. Happy to take your phone calls. On that, coming up, you know what, let's top of the hour, we will do Ray Dinger's college draft preview for the day. What are we looking at today?
Fair enough. I'm going to do the overall breakdown position by position, which areas are strong and which areas are weak.
Beautiful. Looking forward to that. 888-729-9494. Patrick and Larry will get you guys coming right up. Anybody else is invited to join after that. We're at the NovaCare broadcast booth at Citizens Bank Park. Phillies Twins coming up this afternoon. Hey, are you tired of dealing with those old, inefficient windows and doors in your house? Maybe it's time to go Gaida. How about the drafty, beat-up-looking entry door that you've painted over more times than you can count? Go Gaida. If you need added protection from the elements with a new storm door, go Gaida. How about that sliding patio door or that garage door you've been meaning to replace? Go Gaida. Whatever your home improvement needs are, I suggest you go Gaida with the great people at Gaida Door and Window. To help you get your project started, Gaida is offering 20% off all windows and doors while allowing you to start your project with no money down and up to 3 full years to pay off interest-free. That's right. Receive 20% instant savings with the luxury of paying off your project interest-free for up to 36 months. Offers for a limited time only. So what are you waiting for? Time you finally go Gaida. Call today to schedule a free in-home estimate at 1-877-GO-GAIDA or visit them at gogaida.com. That's go, G-U-I-D-A.com. Ray Dinger, Glenn Mack now, 94 WIP. Phil's Minnesota Twins coming up today, 105 at the ballpark. Always a fun time here. We see our friend John Brazier.
John Brazier just stopped by to say hello.
She at the age where she really likes baseball? Oh, yeah. Yeah, come here. That's right, Ray. You know, of course, that John Brazier is a proud Cavalier.
Oh, that's right.
So I'm going to hand him the microphone just for a second and allow you to kind of, not gloat, but congratulations, your team's in the final. They got that cheap foul at the end, and you got to feel good about that.
Well, I tell you what, after last year, obviously the only number one seed ever to lose was a 16 seed. It was the most devastating loss. It was actually a topped Mitch Williams home run ball for me. It really did. To then see the redemption and then getting humiliated all year, everyone bringing it up, and the redemption tour, the grace that Tony Bennett handled that loss, it's a teaching moment for every coach out there. This is a 30-30 waiting to happen that, yes, we're starting to get all the breaks UVA, but you know what? Last night, it's a team of destiny. Ty Jerome got pulled on the jersey. People aren't saying that. He got pulled on the jersey, which basically pushed him forward to lose the ball. So it was nobody saw that in real time, and that was a foul at the end. Some people are saying, well, you shouldn't call it at that moment. It's a foul. A foul is a foul. And it's great that Kyle Guy, of all people, was able to hit all three. I mean, that guy was so cool, calm, cool, and collected when he hit that.
Remember when that was going to be a quick hit?
Come on. Anytime we get to talk UVA hoops on a Philly show.
All right, buddy. Enjoy. Right. Congratulations. Good luck in the finals. I'm definitely rooting for him against Texas Tech, so you got my support there. All right, Ray, let's see what the people have to say. Patrick in Tabernacle is going to start us out. Patrick, you're on with Ray and Glenn.
Glenn and Ray, love listening to you guys. And Glenn, you couldn't have said everything more eloquently. I actually took some time real quick to look at the Flyers' record over the past seasons and like you said, Lavalette and back in those days. And he's, look at where he's still at with Nashville.
Yeah, he's done well since then.
Yeah. But, the Flyers, I still look at them. And guys, maybe you can help me understand the Flyers a little better organizationally. Why is Paul Holmgren and Bobby Clarke still employed? Why are they still here?
Well, I don't know that Bob is, Bob is still part of the organization. I mean, he's still in the club directory, but I don't get the feeling that Bobby's very involved at all. I mean, he lives most of the year in Florida.
Okay.
Holmgren is your question, and I think it's a fair question.
Well, that's it. He's president, and when you look at Holmgren specifically, boy, he's very questionable as a hockey mind. His playing career aside, but as a his,
Yeah, if they're going to hire a new, let me pick up on what Patrick said. Right, they're going to hire a new coach, okay? And Paul Holmgren is presumably going to be the guy who's going to, along with the general manager, the president of the team, is going to make that decision.
Right?
Should he?
Mm-hmm. No, I think that. Well, I think it's going to be Chuck Fletcher's call.
Yeah, but doesn't Holmgren in the end get to veto it or approve it?
I kind of get the feeling Fletcher's calling the shots. And could Paul veto it?
What's Paul's job? Financial wizard?
I guess he could, but I don't imagine that he will. To me, this is all about Chuck Fletcher.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question, and if your answer is I don't know, that's entirely legitimate. What is Paul Holmgren's role going forward?
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't either.
I mean, don't you get the feeling that, that Fletcher is the guy that's calling the shots now?
I guess, but if that's the case, is Paul just collecting the salary? Again, he's not the cap genius, right? He's the president of the team, but he's not the president of the team in the way Howie Roseman is or Joe Banner used to be. You know, I'm talking about the Eagles.
No, the front office is structured entirely
differently. Right, so what does the president of the team do? Represent them at league meetings?
I don't know. You'd have to explain the whole front office to me now, because it was much easier to understand when Snyder was here, because Snyder really did call the shots.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, it looks to me like every time you see somebody quoted talking about moves we're going to make, the direction of the franchise and so forth, it's all about Fletcher. And I kind of understand that, because they've brought him in to clean this thing up. So I think this is his, I think this is his task. And it's going to be his hire.
So Paul is kind of like the Queen of England. He rules but doesn't reign but not rule.
Well, I'm sure he has a voice in it, but I think the largest voice right now is Fletcher.
All right, hold on. Let's get a couple calls here, and we'll take a quick break because we got a special guest come up at the top of the hour. Larry in Glen Olden joins us. Hey, Larry.
Good morning, guys.
How are you?
Great. I want to expand a little bit. What is this situational referee? Do you guys believe in that kind of stuff?
Oh, I mean, that's just a fact of life. In every sport, there are certain things that in a close, late, important game, kind of you let the guys play. That's been going on in sports since forever.
Right, but on that play, the guy left his feet, and he hit the guy on his hip on the follow-through. So you're telling me that should be let go?
I would have. Obviously, a lot of people like you feel the other way. I don't think it's a clear-cut one, but, yeah, I would have.
Well, it's a shame because if they called a double dribble when it came to that, Auburn should have won. We know this. But, you know, you miss a call, you miss a call. There, I believe if you leave your feet and you're leaning towards the player, you know, off your feet, you hit him while he's shooting the foul through, you got to call that.
Okay. I mean,
my question to you, though, is where do you draw the line? I mean, if you're saying you put away the whistle, I understand, close game, you draw the line. If he hits his hand, you don't call it. Or if he hits his hip, you don't call it.
I think an egregious foul that affected the shot, I would call.
Egregious, that's a loose term.
See, my thought was, and this was what I asked Jerry the ref, was did you think that actually altered the shot? And I didn't think that it did. I mean, there was contact clearly, but I didn't think that it altered the shot. And
yeah,
if it didn't alter the shot, then I, in that situation, I can't blow the whistle.
Yeah, just with me, with the referee standing there with his hand up for the three, he's looking right at him. He sees the guy leave his feet. If you don't make the call, I mean, it's kind of tough.
I know. Well, You see it a lot on three pointers now. I mean, you see it an awful lot on three pointers now. But to your point about when to apply it to the sport that I do mostly, which is football, if I see holding or an illegal block, but it's on the backside of a play and it really doesn't have anything to do with where the ball carrier is going through the hole or the run, I'm more inclined to let that go. Even if it's arguably maybe a hold, the guy's got a piece of a jersey. If the run's going the other way and it has no bearing on the play, I'm going to let it go.
All right, Ray, we're going to take the break into the top of the hour. At this point, Ray, you're only the second handsomest man in this booth, I'm afraid to say.
Oh, I'll take a back seat to this guy.
Our friend Ben Davis, Phillies broadcaster, came in. We're going to discuss what he has seen over the course of the first seven games of the year, and we'll take your calls, too. 888-729-9494. Ray Dinger, Glenn Mack now from the NovaCare broadcast booth, Citizens Bank Park. Phillies Twins coming up this afternoon on 94 WIP. Very exciting play from yesterday. It doesn't work out, as you hear Bryce Harper tagged out at home. And our guest Ben Davis is here with us, and I got like four questions on that play. First of all, Ben, always great to see you. You're going to be calling the game today with Tom McCarthy and Mike Schmidt. We watch you on TV. So let me ask you about that.
Okay.
Obviously, that play occurred as it did because a few years ago they changed the rule in baseball. You can't run over the catcher anymore.
Yes.
Astudillo, who I find fascinating on a bunch of levels.
I'm with you.
He's like this short, fat guy who hits. Do you know he has the highest batting average of any player in the history of baseball with over 100 at bats?
It's amazing. And he doesn't strike out ever.
And he never strikes out. He strikes out like four times every 100 at bats.
Yeah.
And he doesn't walk.
No. He's an anomaly.
Yeah, it is. But anyway, Are we better off for, or not better off for, what is generally known as the Buster Posey rule? You cannot run the catcher, so you try to leap over him.
Yeah, it's funny. Kevin Franson, who will be doing some of the radio games this year on the road, Kevin texted me after that play occurred, and he goes, how great a play was that from Astudillo? And I said, it was a good play. I said, I think it was a better throw from Buxton, how he's able to get in that, throw it right on the money to get Harper, who runs really well. But for the from a catcher standpoint, all you have to do is catch it and apply the tag anymore. There's no fear, especially coming from the right side, because that was always where you were vulnerable. You couldn't see the runner coming, and there were a lot of times where you would catch it and turn and just get blown up because you didn't know how close the runner was. And now it's, you know, it's there's that fear factor is completely gone, and it was a good play. I'm not taking that away from the young man.
No. Do you agree with your guy who caught? You were in your...
I hate the play. I hate the way it is now.
Okay,
I absolutely
you were
in
your
it.
Share of home plate collisions.
I was, and they don't feel good. But I think it takes a lot of that out of the game, and I think it's bad for the game. If you don't want your catcher hurt, play him in a different position.
All right, last one, and I'll turn it over to Ray. Even in and out, Bryce Harper is compellingly exciting.
He has, first and foremost, he's done and said everything perfectly. But he is compelling. It's every foul ball that's kind of mediocre going over the dugout, you hope it blows into the stands because you want to see the next swing. You don't want to see him foul out. It's a must-see at bat. And he's played a very good right field. He's got some really good jumps on balls. His base running has been off the charts. Obviously, we know what he did the other night on the single that Hoskins hit, score all three runs. He scored from first base on the single. And what he did yesterday on that ball he hit to right center, you know, off the end of the bat, he was thinking two out of the box and made it in the second base with a head first slide. Those are the kind of intangibles, I think, that is what the Phillies really appreciate. I know I appreciate it just watching him. His baseball instincts are there, but he is must-see television right now.
Ben, I don't know that we had a chance to talk to you during the offseason when the whole Harper-Machado dichotomy was going on. It was a question. I think everybody kind of thought the Phillies were going to come away with one of them. It was a question of which one. And there were different opinions. Some people were strong Machado. Some people were strong Harper. Where did you come down on that?
I was 50-50, be honest with you, Ray. I wanted, I just wanted to see how it was going to go down. I know they're both exceptional players, both about to be in the primes of their careers. And I was 50-50. I mean, if they can get one of them, that would be great. McCutchen signs. Segura traded. We acquire Real Muto. And then I was all in on Harper because we needed a left-handed bat to really balance out the lineup. And that's what he provides. And I couldn't be happier with the pick.
In looking at those four so far, and Real Muto is not off to a particularly good start, but he will. He'll be fine. But if you're looking at Harper, Segura, McCutchen, and Real Muto, have you seen anything that surprised you from them? Anything that's better than you might have expected or not as good as you might have expected?
With JT, it's throwing the ball. I think he's been... I mean, his release, he's so quick to his feet, and his arm strength is better than what I thought it was going to be. Because we only got to see him a handful of times over the last so many years. And let's face it, I mean, no one really steals a lot of bases anymore, so you don't get to see that part of him where he gets and throws it. The Phillies don't steal a lot of bases. Really, no team steals a lot of bases. But the opportunities that he's had, he's gotten to his feet quickly and thrown the ball really well.
Mm-hmm. What is your feeling when Gabe decided on this lineup now that he's run out there most of the times with Franco hitting eight? We all see what the early sampling on Franco in the eight spot has been tremendous, but were you a little surprised that that's the way it went down, and did you think that Franco would thrive in the eighth hole the way he has?
I didn't know how he would thrive. It's the hardest, and unfortunately, Ray, I had to hit that eight slot a lot in my career in the National League. It is not an easy spot to hit in. I mean, you're seeing all these intentional walks, but you come up with a man on second base and two outs and base open, you don't know what you're going to get. Sometimes you'll get challenged. Other times you just, you know, pitch around you, and you end up fishing for pitches because you want to do something. I didn't know how it was going to go down because Michael can be a free swinger at times.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
But he's been excellent, and he's thriving in that position, and there's no reason for Gabe to move him. I know his numbers – you know, say differently, but for now, I think the lineup is clicking the way it is.
And by the way, that lineup is playing, the standard lineup,
yes,
is playing today. It's played every game other than yesterday when they rested Real Muto. He's sticking with it. And I know the Phillies haven't hit a home run in 130 at bats. Ray, I believe they hit some today. I believe our bet advances today. Actually, Ray and I made a bet.
Okay.
Made a wager. Steak dinner at the Palm. Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, it's our standard bet. So it's the home run derby, and it's most total home runs. Allow me to establish I gave Ray his option to take which side he wanted. And it is more combined home runs at the end of the season. The new guys, which would be Harper, McCutchen, Segura, and Real Muto,
mm-hmm.
or the carryovers to the lineup, which is Hoskins, Herrera, Franco, and Hernandez. I also get Kingery.
Okay.
Who's going to hit more combined home runs? The new or the?
The new. The new.
All right. Well, it doesn't help.
Sorry to burst your bubble.
This
is
no help.
I think the new group is going to hit a few more. I do.
I'm counting on Reese. This isn't home runs, but I actually did lay a wager that Reese Hoskins will lead the National League in RBIs.
I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised. His home runs come in bunches. He's going to have traffic on the bases in front of him. I think he's just really, we're getting to see what a kind of special hitter he is. He's phenomenal. And his ability to hit the low ball. You don't see a whole lot of righties hitting the low ball the way he does. And to top it off, he's probably one of the nicest kids you'll ever meet.
How much is he going to get thrown at this year?
I don't know if he's.
What we've seen so far, is that what it's going to be like all summer?
Yeah, well, the pitch that Rob Drake threw that guy out the other night, I don't think that was intentional at all. I think it was a freezing cold night. Pitch got away from him. It just happened to be after a home run. So I don't think there was any intent there. Well, I don't know. I still don't think it was intentional, but they do like to celebrate after a home run. They like to congratulate each other.
The one thing that's been a little bit of a concern through the first seven games, of course, is the bullpen, particularly the back end of the bullpen. Robertson off to a rough start. Looked better in his last outing. Sir Anthony gave up the three-run homer yesterday after a walk and a hit batsman. Who else? Somebody else is way up there in ERA. Alvarez. Hadn't pitched much, but his ERA is over 10. Your level of concern on that?
It's not high, and I was listening to you guys on the way up in the truck today, and you were debating, you know, Robertson, and you were talking about Sir Anthony. There is a little concern from my perspective on Sir Anthony, and the fact that we saw it yesterday with Jonathan Scope leading off 0-2, and then he works to a walk. It doesn't seem like he has that finishing touch,
right.
And I know, Ray, you were alluding to his movement. That is something, his ball does seem a little bit straighter. It doesn't have that late cut to it. When he gets through it, he can get as good a acceleration through the ball, he will get that movement. But there's a little concern. He's got the goods. I mean, he's got three very good pitches in the fastball, changeup, and slider. I think in the last couple outings, though, he's thrown a little too many sliders. I think he's really concentrated on that pitch, and I'd like to see him go ahead and tackle it. Best pitch in baseball is a located fastball. You've heard me say it a gazillion times. If he can locate that fastball, he's not going to have any issues. He just won't.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about I thought the Klintak did a really good job this offseason. The Harper signing is obviously the one that everybody talks about, but everything he did leading up to that really made this a much better team. And the one that I kind of thought never really got the attention it deserved was the trade for Segura.
I'm with you.
I mean, boy, what a player.
He's excellent.
And he's been really good through his whole career. He's been very consistent. There's no up and down there. I mean, every year you can pencil him in for 90 runs scored. He's got power, and he's a – You know, and look, he's not Jimmy Rollins, but he's certainly a good defensive shortstop.
Yes.
And you plug him into that lineup, and the contribution he's going to make over the course of the season, I think is going to be tremendous.
Yeah, and he's going to continue to fly under the radar. He's going to get pitches to hit with Bryce hitting behind him. He's going to hit 300+. He's going to hit you 10 to 15 home runs and play a solid shortstop. And, you know, it is such a good pickup. That trade was absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal to get Gene Segura. And, you know, I was talking with Ned Rice, the Phillies assistant general manager, going back to the Real Muto trade. And this was even after they signed Harper. And I told Ned, I said, you know what, I had better confidence in signing Machado or Harper than of us ever acquiring Real Muto. Mm-hmm. And he said, I agree with you. I really do.
Yeah.
That trade to get JT, it just caught me off guard. It caught me by surprise. And it was like, wait a minute, we didn't have to give up a whole lot to get JT. We still have him for two more years before he's a free agent. We could probably get something done. Hopefully they can get something done. I mean, that was like, talk about a rabbit out of a hat. I mean, that was just a phenomenal deal that they were able to pull off.
Yeah, and they're gonna he's kind of your next free agent priority because his contract is going to come up, and you don't trade for a guy like that and then not plan to keep him, and my hunch is They'll keep him.
And one thing I do like about him, and obviously I'm a little more critical on catchers, and I critique them. And One thing that I've noticed about JT is, first of all, he's a specimen. I mean, the guy takes great care of himself, but he's very – I think he's going to be very durable. He's flexible. Mm. He moves well behind the plate. He's – you know, and that means a lot. You get guys that are back there, they're rigid. They, you know, next thing you know, they end up, you know, not being able to catch every day like he's going to be able to. But he takes care of his body. He's flexible. He stays in good shape. And I think that's going to really, you know, elongate his career.
Ben Davis, it is always a pleasure. We look forward this afternoon listening or watching you on TV with Tommy McCarthy and Mike Schmidt.
Thank you very much. Well, it should be a good game today. Barrios is for the Twins. He's tough.
All-star last year. Yeah,
he's tough. Yeah. So they have their work cut out for him, but we'll see what happens.
There you go.
Thanks, guys.
Let's sneak in a call or two here, Ray. We'll go to Ron in Pottstown. Ron, you're on with Ray and Glenn.
Hey, good morning, fellas. I have an Eagles question, but as an old catcher who played high school and Legion ball, I agree with Ben. I used to love to block the plate, and even though I got knocked out by Andre Thornton.
Wow.
Yeah. He could have been a Division I running back. He was that good. I love to put a hard tag on somebody when I got set up, and I love that part of the game, and I miss it in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, it is funny. It is funny if you talk to guys who did play the position, as Ben did, they will generally say the same thing, that I'm sorry that it's out. Even though they were the guys that were taking the brunt of the punishment, they just always viewed it as a necessary part of the game.
Yeah, and like I said, when I set up and had the ball, I used to put a real hard tag on somebody if they would try to knock me down or something. It's a great position. But I had an Eagles question for Glenn and Ray. Ray, what do you think about the Eagles maybe sliding back in the first round and possibly picking up a third-round pick? My thinking was there's so many great edge rushers and defensive tackles. They could possibly get a defensive tackle or edge rusher in the first round, and then the second round pick up their tackle and whatever they don't get the first round, either edge rusher or defensive tackle, and then the third round is safety.
Mm-hmm. Well, You're already picking 25, which is, you're pretty far down.
Yeah.
So I think it's one of the – look, the Eagles are always open to moving. I mean, every time Howie runs the draft, it's very rare that he stays in one place. I mean, he is either usually moving up or moving down based on what's happening on the board. I think it's – to me, it's one of those calls that you make when you're on the clock. You know, when you look and you see what's on the board, if there's a player there – that you really, really like, and he's in an area where you need help, hard to trade that away and say, oh, you know what, let's slide back four spots, get a couple of picks, and maybe we'll get him then. Well, you know what, maybe you won't. I think you kind of just, to me, I've always, my approach would always be, let's let it go, wait till we're on the clock, see who's on the board. If we love who's there and we need him, let's go for him. If we think that we can have a plan B here and we can get away with it, maybe then we entertain the thought. But, you know, the one thing we know about the Eagles, and especially with Howie making the calls, is they're very open to trading, and they're very open. Sometimes they move up, sometimes they move down. Some teams just never do it. Some teams just stay in place and they just don't move at all. The Eagles aren't like that. They'll if they think they can make a better deal, they'll make it.
Let's sneak in Rich and Bryn Mawr here before the break. Rich, you're on with Ray and Glenn.
Hi, guys. Hey. I want to talk about the Flyers' bad times, and it seems to me it's the ownership. I mean, NBC, Comcast should not be owning a local hockey team. It's a national company. They haven't been good for years, so I think the last years of Snyder, who was a great guy, was a problem. And really, I think you can't keep firing coaches and general managers. You need to get new owners.
I think the problem is nobody really knows who the owners are or what the owner knows about hockey. So Dave Scott is the guy who runs it for Comcast.
Right.
And I don't know what he knows about hockey. I don't want to say he's disqualified from being the owner because he's, you know, with NBC and with Comcast, or whatever it's called these days. But I also have questions about his hockey credentials, you know. So I'm half on board with you in that I am skeptical, but because a guy, it's a national company. He's based here. They're based here.
Yeah, but I think corporate ownership has not been good in sports in general. You're better off with a local guy, or even not a local guy, but one guy who has the fever.
So let me ask you a question. Does Jeff Lurie qualify as a local guy?
Yeah, he's local. Okay. He lives. He's here.
Okay. And he wasn't when he bought the team. Well, Snyder was in L.A. at the end. Yeah, okay.
But, okay, so maybe it's not a local guy. It's one guy who cares about that team.
Okay. I hear you, and I don't really disagree with you. I just don't know that that's realistic in this day and age when you have something that costs that much that it's going to be that way.
Yeah, more and more teams are going to be owned the way this team is owned. It's because you're talking about billions of dollars for these teams now. Individuals don't have that kind of money. Only corporations do.
888-729-9494. Ray, you are not going to get away without doing it when we get back. The Ray Dinger College Draft Preview. Ray's going to break down some positions, tell us what are the strong position groups in the draft. We're at Citizens Bank Park, NovaCare Broadcast Booth. Phillies Twins coming up this afternoon. Ray Dinger, Glenn Mack now on 95 WIP. Oh, Ray Dinger, we're a mere weeks away from the NFL draft. There are years when this town just is so totally absorbed by it. Not as much this year. The Eagles, what number they picked? 25. Five, okay. And it's the Eagles are going to take A. Could be a number of things. But we will get geeked up for it when it comes. And right now, ladies and gentlemen, here it comes. Ray Dinger's Daily NFL Draft Preview.
Well, the draft is coming up. It's last weekend of the month, and it's going to be the usual routine. First round on Thursday, rounds 2 and 3 on Friday, and then the remainder of it on Saturday. So it's going to go over 3 days. It's going to be down in Nashville. And there's been a lot of conversation already, and there will be more, about where this draft is strong. And I've said it before, and you're going to hear it many times between now and the draft. It is really, really strong on the defensive line. It's really good. And I was looking at this, and this week I was really breaking things down. I have 6 defensive ends that I've given first-round grades to. I have 5 defensive tackles that I've given first-round grades to. And if you want to just make it a front 7 issue, I've got 2 inside linebackers that I've given first-round grades to. So that's 13 players that I've given first-round grades to in the front 7 on defense, which is a lot. But there's real depth there. I've got 3 defensive ends with second-round grades. I've got 3 defensive ends with fourth-round grades. And I'm sorry, third-round grades. Mm-hmm. And 4 with fourth-round grades. It goes all the way through. There's real depth there, similar at defensive tackle. So that's where the great strength is. It really is strong on the defensive line. But there's another area that no one's really talking about, and certainly not in Philadelphia because the Eagles don't really have a need here. But, boy, there are some really, really good tight ends in this draft. And, in fact, I think it's possible you may have 3 tight ends taken in the first round, which would be a lot. You'll generally get 1 taken, maybe 2. Rarely will you see 3 tight ends go in the first round. But I think there are 3 guys in this draft that I have given, let's put it this way, I've given them first-round grades. And I think that they could very easily go in the first round. 2 of them actually from the same school, and that's the University of Iowa.
Wait, two first-round tight ends from the University of Iowa?
Correct.
I wonder if in the history of the draft there have been 2 tight ends from the same school taken in the
first round. I actually tried to look it up, and I couldn't find it. Mm-hmm. So it's very possible that this may be the first time you're ever going to have that. And I'm more than just first-round picks. You could have these 2 guys could both go in the top 12.
Wow.
So you have 2 tight ends from Iowa that are going to go. I guarantee they're both going to go in the first round, and they could go in the top 12 picks in the round, which is really surprising and is very unusual. But these guys are really good. T.J. Hockenson is 6'5", 245, and he runs 4.6 40. And he's pretty much the total package. I mean, he's got the size. He's got the strength. He catches the ball really well. He runs really well. He's an incredibly tough matchup in the red zone. And he's also an outstanding blocker. I mean, if you watch any Iowa games, you go back and watch the film, every game he has 2 or 3 pancake blocks. So in an era when tight ends are becoming more and more like wide receivers and you really can't ask a tight end to block anymore because it's not part of the job description, this guy is sort of, and I'm not comparing him to him, but this guy is Gronkowski-like in the sense that if you ask him to block, he will block willingly, and he will block well. Mm-hmm. The other guy from Iowa is a guy named Noah Font, who's 6'5", 240, and has a lot of the same athletic skills and tested out incredibly well at the combine, had the best vertical leap of any of the tight ends, had the best broad jump of any of them, had the best score on the 3-cone drill. He's a really good athlete, but I think he's one of those guys that tests better than he plays. He's not anywhere near as physical as Hockenson, not nearly as good a blocker as Hockenson, but can run and he can catch. But just on his sheer athletic ability and his promise, mm-hmm. he's going to be a high first-round pick. And the other guy who I think has a chance to be a first-round pick, and probably will, is a guy, this name will be familiar to you. He's Irv Smith Jr. You probably remember his father, played at Notre Dame, and was a first-round pick of the New Orleans Saints, also a tight end. This kid went to the University of Alabama, and he's actually very much physically like his father, 6'4", 245, can line up anywhere, can play inside, can play outside, very good hands, a very fluid route runner. He's an adequate blocker. I wouldn't say he's a blocker on the scale of Hockenson. Mm-hmm. But those are the three guys at tight end that I think will all be first-round picks. I don't know that we've ever seen that before. The one area where I think the draft is a little weak is I gave C grades overall to the guards, and I don't think that there's great depth at offensive tackle, and actually the whole offensive line. If you're really looking to rebuild your offensive line, this isn't a great draft for it. The tackles, the guards, centers, just kind of an average crop, certainly nowhere near what you got in the defensive line. And in the deep secondary, the safeties, you got a couple good ones, but not a lot of great depth there. So there's that in a nutshell. That's your draft. Very good on the defensive line. Surprisingly good and deep at the tight end position, and probably a little weaker than you normally see on the offensive line.
All right. So if I were to say to you, it makes the most sense, and we should expect that the Eagles in the first round will draft either a defensive tackle or a defensive end. Would you agree?
I would agree.
Okay.
Now, the only qualifier I would throw out there is this. If they don't make a move for another running back between now and the draft, let's say they don't make a trade for Duke Johnson.
Right.
Okay, so let's
And I want to ask you about that.
So let's say they go into the draft and they haven't added another defensive back other than Jordan Howard. And you come up at 25 and Josh Jacobs, the running back from Alabama, who's everybody's top running back, including mine, is still on the board, which is really possible. Yeah. I mean, you could go through the first 24 picks and not have a running back taken. And you come up at 25, and the highest-rated player on the board, you got a shot at any running back in the draft. Does that make you rethink? I mean, I would say normally in a draft this deep, defensive line is probably the way to go because you're going to have a really good one sitting there. But what if you have a chance to draft the best running back in the draft? Would you go that way? That might be a decision that they'll have to make.
Yeah, and everybody says, oh, there's no way they'll take a running back. There's no way they'll get in the later round. And it's probably most likely, but I don't have a problem with that. Hey, you brought up Duke Johnson, and yes, the story has come out again this week that he wants to be traded. He doesn't see a role for himself in Cleveland. They picked up Kareem Hunt, who's
right.
suspended for however long he's suspended. They have Nick Chubb, who just was terrific in the back half of the season. Duke Johnson is a guy who primarily catches passes, but he can run. If they put him on the market, and you could get him for something affordable, which we've learned you can get a running back for something affordable, would you add him to the stable?
If the price was right, I would absolutely do that, yeah. Because I think that he would be the complement opposite Howard. Howard is more of a between-the-tackles power runner, but he's not much of a receiver. Duke Johnson is a smaller guy who's very quick and a very good receiver. I mean, that's his strength. So if you're looking at sort of your backfield by committee where guys are going to play certain roles, you would have your first down back, your goal line back, your short yardage back in Howard. And then if you go to the spread and you go to your passing situation, you go to your nickel offense, then Duke Johnson come in and be receiving back. I mean, that would be a fit.
I'd like him. Who is the receiving back now?
Well, depends. Do you think Darren Sproles is coming back?
I don't know.
But I kind of think not.
I don't think I can count on Darren Sproles.
Well, I mean, for 2 years now, I mean, you haven't been able to.
Right.
So I think more likely than not, he's probably not coming back. And at this point, I certainly wouldn't count on him. And then your other option is Corey Clement, who's coming off a significant injury and didn't have a particularly good year last year. So Yeah, I mean, you really have to kind of rebuild that whole running game, I think. And you've gone a long way towards doing that. And Howard is a very good pickup. But you still need that other guy that you can count on. And, listen, I've liked Duke Johnson since I saw him play at the University of Miami. I mean, he's not a lead back. He's not a heavy-duty back. He's not a power guy. I mean, he's 5'9", 195. But he can get out of the backfield, he can catch the ball, and he can make people miss in the open field. So if you can get him for like a fifth-round pick, heck, I would do that.
I would do that in a second.
Sure.
One other thing, and our friend Ross Tucker had an interesting tweet this week that I want to get your sense on. This came after you saw that story that broke this week about the Packers and the schism that was there between Aaron Rodgers and the head coach. And, you know, it was one of those stories where all the dirty laundry gets out. Mike McCarthy used to skip team meetings to get a massage. And Aaron Rodgers deliberately ignored calls, the plays that he called in from the sidelines. And it just sounds like for a team that was pretty good in recent years, it was as dysfunctional as anything could be.
Yeah, a lot of, well, the massage stuff, that came out later, but a lot of the stuff in terms of the rift between Rodgers and McCarthy, that was, yeah, a lot of people were talking about that even as the season went on. And you can kind of, you could kind of see it if you watch the Packers games. You could just kind of see in terms of the sideline conversations between Rodgers and McCarthy, you kind of got the look that Rodgers wasn't listening or you know, he was arguing. There just seemed to be a tension between the two of them that you got the feeling that something wasn't right. And then, you know, he winds up, you make the change, you know, he doesn't even get to finish the season. So, yeah, I mean, it was pretty well out there that there was a real divide between the coach and the quarterback.
So you have that. You have what is really one of the most respected historic franchises in the NFL in complete disarray.
Mm-hmm.
You also have the Pittsburgh Steelers, who this offseason had a situation where their two most dangerous skill players just essentially walked away and forced them, the Steelers, to move on, and it sounds like it's a mess there.
It does.
You also have the Steelers, again, are there any more classic, you know, old-time respected family football franchises than the Packers and the Steelers?
No. Two of the most stable franchises that date back to the very beginnings of the NFL. Yeah, I mean, it was very, very surprising to see one of them in disarray, much less two.
Right, and then you add to that the Giants, who decided a year after they signed Odell Beckham Jr. and said he's here forever, that they moved him on to Cleveland. And Ross Tucker tweeted the other day, the combined dysfunction for model franchises like the Giants, Steelers, and Packers this year is almost unfathomable. And I hadn't put it in that context of looking at those three teams, you know, but that's not it's not the Browns, who are now kind of the flip side, the Chargers, and just teams that are always a mess.
The Cardinals,
right.
Right.
Who still are a mess, but it's not those teams. It's the backbone teams, and I just kind of wanted your take.
Teams that always had a very distinct personality, had a real plan for what kind of players they wanted to draft, how they wanted to build. It wasn't, these were organizations that weren't sort of all over the map about, let's try this. No, maybe we'll try that. Oh, that isn't really what we are. Let's try this. I mean, with the Packers, you kind of knew what they were. But the Steelers, you absolutely knew what they were. And every year they just plugged new players into the system, but the system always stayed in place. Well, now you're to a point where you've got players that are actually questioning the system. And if that's the case, then where do these franchises go? The one thing we do know is that quarterbacks still call the shots. You know, when it came down to a point where they had to choose between the quarterback and the coach in Green Bay, they had no problem taking the quarterback. And it's kind of the same thing in Pittsburgh. It's obvious when certain players have problems with Ben Roethlisberger, guess what? Ben stays, they go.
Yeah, because you can find a running back. To find a quarterback is a generational.
Exactly.
Or for some teams is a generational challenge.
Yep.
Which is why I got faith in Wentz, and I feel like this is gonna work out.
Yeah, I mean, the Eagles do have that going for them. They're pretty stable, and it's been a strange offseason. And you know where the Giants are going right now, Glenn, I can't begin to tell you. Gettleman keeps talking like he's got everything under control, and I got a plan. Don't worry, we got a plan. Well,
remain calm. All is well.
You better show it to me because I don't see it right at the moment.
Well, you showed me the Jimmy Shapiro odds, the Bovada odds for over-unders for the NFC East. We don't need to go through all 32 franchises, But for the NFC East, I know the Eagles came in at 9.5, which right. seems about right.
Mm-hmm.
What about the others?
The Dallas Cowboys are at 8.5. The New York wow. Giants are at 6.
Mm.
And the Washington Redskins are at 6. So that's how they see the NFC. And it's interesting, I saw a story in one of the New York papers today that when this came out, one of the New York papers asked a fan poll, okay, the over-under for wins for the Giants is 6. What do you think, over-under? And like 65% of the people said under.
Yeah.
So, they don't even think the Giants are going to win 6 games right now. And to be honest, if you asked me today, I would probably say the same thing.
How about the possibility of extending Eli? Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, I don't see that happening. Let's see what the Giants do. I mean, I really have a feeling
you scared me yesterday with your projection of what they might do is it made me a little nervous.
Well, what I think is very possible is if the Cardinals actually stay at number one and take Kyler Murray, the quarterback from Alabama, the quarterback from Oklahoma, which I do think they're going to do, then they're certainly not going to keep Josh Rosen, who was their number one pick last year. And I think Josh Rosen can still play. So if they take Murray, then they put Rosen on the market. And I could see the Giants trading like a second-round pick to get Rosen, and then using their 2 first-round picks to get defensive players. I mean, that would, to me, that would make some sense. And it wouldn't surprise me if that really happens. Whether they get him or not, I don't know. But I would certainly assume that they'll be in that conversation.
Okay. 888-729-9494. You got time and inclination to do a quick what we're watching. I know you went to the movies.
Sure, absolutely.
Up? All right, we'll talk a little bit about Phillies Twins today, and just a little. I got a little thing on Jeff Lurie that we got to get to before we get out of here. Ray is leaving at the top of the hour. I'm staying to do leading off till 1:30. Till 12:30. Phil's Twins begins at 1. Hey, are you tired of dealing with those old, inefficient windows in your house? Well, it's time to go Gaida. How about the drafty, beat-up-looking entry door? You painted it over more times than you can count. Go Gaida. If you need added protection from the elements with a new storm door, go Gaida. And what about that sliding patio door or the garage door that you've been meaning to replace? Go Gaida. Whatever your home improvement needs are, I suggest you go Gaida with the great people at Gaida Door and Window. To help you get your project started, Gaida is offering 20% off all windows and doors while allowing you to start your project with no money down and up to 3 full years to pay them off interest-free. That's right. Receive 20% instant savings with the luxury of paying off your project interest-free for up to 36 months. Offers for a limited time only. So what are you waiting for? It's time you finally go Gaida. Call today. Schedule a free in-house estimate at 1-877-GO-GAIDA. Or visit them at goguida.com. That's go, G-U-I-D-A.com. Well, yesterday, Ray, I reviewed the new Netflix movie, The Highwaymen, starring
right.
Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson. And I liked it. I didn't love it. It was a solid B.
Okay.
All right. A little bit too long. Could have had a little more action. But it's your good buddy movie. And it's Costner doing Elliot Ness with a cowboy accent.
Right.
You know that character. You
yeah.
can do that character.
Yeah, he's sort of a dressed-down Elliot Ness. Remember,
yeah.
Elliot always wore the 3-piece suits.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's not doing that. But it was good as they go hunt Bonnie and Clyde in 1934. Good period piece. I liked it. But you went to the movies, and I know you came back, and I know this movie disturbed you.
It did. I went to see a movie called Hotel Mumbai, which is a recreation of the terrorist attack on the Taj Mahal Hotel in Mumbai, India, which goes back almost 10 years now. And it was very troubling. It was a very well-made film. Extremely realistic, to the point where there were times where you actually thought you were watching a documentary as opposed to a movie. But I don't know, Glenn. This is one of those where I'm sitting watching it, and it is so graphic, a film about these terrorists, and they're just boys, and there are a dozen of them, who go on this shooting rampage in Mumbai, and just especially in this hotel, where they just gun down a bunch of innocent people. And that's right. basically it for 2 hours. I don't know if it's a case of the fact that, for me, it came so close after the massacre in New Zealand that happened in real life, in real time, that we watched on the news.
Right.
But to see this movie right after that maybe if that hadn't happened, I might have viewed this whole movie differently.
You know,
but this I found troubling.
But there's always going to be.
There's always going to be.
You know, there's one of those on a regular basis, which is the shame of the way the world is these days. Was there a point to it other than to disturb you and frighten you?
Other than the fact that it was extremely well made, it was, you know, it's one of those movies you can make the case that it gives you a real window into the real world of today. And I kind of felt the same way after watching this. And I give the director, Anthony Maris, a lot of credit. I mean, it was an extremely well-made film. And it just scared the bejesus
obviously stuck
out
with
of you.
It had an impact.
Scared the bejesus out of you. But it reminded me a lot of, I don't know if you saw the movie United 93.
Yeah,
that
I
was
did.
About the hijacked airliner that went down. Again, an extremely well-made film, but there's a part of you when you're sitting there watching it saying, is this really entertainment?
Yeah.
You know, and I guess I'm of two minds about it. The people in the theater that when I saw Hotel Mumbai, when it was over and you're walking up the aisle and you hear the conversations of people going around you, people really enjoyed it, and they liked the fact that they thought it was a really well-made film. And it certainly brought you up close and personal into the world of terrorists and terrorism. But again, I thought coming so close on the heels of the New Zealand tragedy, it was a tough watch for me.
Yeah.
So I can admire it as a piece of filmmaking, I guess what I'm saying is I can't recommend it.
Got it.
For entertainment. New York Times called it terrorism as a popcorn movie. And I think that's kind of how I felt about it, too.
Yeah,
so
I'll pass.
So I'm going to give it 2 stars.
When you had told me this, it got me thinking. I remember Hotel Rwanda, which I watched a couple of years ago with Don Cheadle, which was a very disturbing movie. And the Forrest Whitaker movie about Idi Amin,
Last King of Scotland.
Right, which is, again, it was a very good movie, and I think he was up for an Oscar, but it's... You watch a movie like that, and, you know, maybe you've gained something, but, boy, it's tough.
Forrest Whitaker won the Oscar for playing Edie Amin.
All right. Let's sneak in a couple of calls here. Vince in Delaware wants to talk a little bit about the Phil's closer situation. Vince, what do you got?
Well, we have no closer situation, apparently, but I just want to understand why when you have a left-hander warming up and you have Sir Anthony, who has not been good lately, he had no command at least the last 2 games. Why you don't bring the left-hander up when you have 2 left-handed batters coming up and you know he has a left-hander warming up and let Sir Anthony pitch to him?
Yeah, well, I can tell you what the manager says, which is that Gabe Kapler has faith in Sir Anthony getting out left-handers. Clearly, that did not prove to be the case.
I didn't understand it. One observation with regard to your thing about officiating, I think we ought to, particularly in football, where you have 120 yards of field to cover, I don't think anybody over 40 should be refereeing football. I mean, you have 120 yards to cover.
No, I understand your point. Ray, is part of the problem being the referees cannot keep up with the play?
Well, they're not going to be, I mean, you can be, you know, a 33-year-old official, and you're not going to be able to run with a guy that's doing a 4.3 40. I mean, you're going to be behind the play anyway. And I know that these guys, part of every year's evaluation is they have to go to what amounts to almost like they have to go to their own combine, and they have to do some tests where they have to pass some running tests, and they kind of gently weed out older guys. If you look at the games now, there aren't a few years ago, there were more older officials than there are now. It tends to be younger because they are kind of trying to make the group younger because I think they kind of need to be. But the idea of getting officials that can keep pace with the game, you're never going to do that because you're never going to get guys that are going to be able to run with receivers in today's NFL.
I'm telling you, Ray, there's only one answer in the NFL.
It's your judge in the sky.
It's that you got to move most of the refereeing to upstairs, and it's got to be refereed from there because – you can see it better on TV than you can see it in real time or on the field. And that's just it's to me, it's the inevitable answer. They talked about it this year. They didn't get there. They will. In 5 years, my idea is going to be exactly the way it works.
Well, it could be. I will say this, that it was talked about extensively this offseason, and that very idea was put on the table, the idea of having – one other official being a guy who's up in the booth and he's watching the game on television, seeing all the same things that we see. and he can make a call up there, and his call is final. That was discussed, and the owners and the competition committee decided that they weren't ready to go there yet. So they're going to do this experimental thing for 1 year and see where it goes. But you may be right. I mean, it may be, I'm not going to say it to the point of inevitability that we're going to get there, but I'm sure that the conversation will continue. It wouldn't surprise me if we're having the same conversation next offseason.
Oh, I'm sure we will. Hey, one other thing that I wanted to bring up to you, and again, Ray is leaving at the top of the hour. I am sticking around for Phillies Twins. We're going to do leading off. Jack McCaffrey, the Delco Times, is going to join us for a conversation here at the NovaCare broadcast booth, and we'll give you all the highlights going into Phil's Twins today. Yesterday, and thanks to Ruben Frank, who's the guy who pointed this out, because I think everybody else missed it. Yesterday was the 25th anniversary of Jeff Lurie buying the Eagles.
Yep.
And I remember the day the story broke. I was doing it was my first year at WIP. I had started in December, and so this was the March. And I was doing a show from McDonald's in New Jersey with Jody Mack in the snow when this thing all broke, that Norman Braman was selling the team, which was the big news to us. We all hated Norman Braman.
Right.
And was selling it to some guy we had no idea who he was. Who's this guy? He's a movie producer? What? We all went to see, like, V.I. Warshawski, like, you know, find out what we could.
that wasn't good.
Not particularly. He did one good. What's the name of the I Love You to Death? Was that the name?
I Love You to Death wasn't bad,
yeah,
and
was a good movie.
Sweetheart's Dance wasn't bad.
Yeah, it was all right.
V.I. Warshawski was not good.
Not so much. But anyway. And Rube pointed this out in his story, that the big knock on Jeff Lurie when he bought the Eagles is he's not a Philly guy. He's an outsider. He's a Boston guy. He had tried to buy the Patriots, which certainly did not endear him with any of us.
And he tried to get the team in Baltimore, and that didn't pan out. He had been nibbling around the edges of trying to get an NFL team for a while. So that's how I knew about him. But no one really knew that he was in on the Eagles until it happened.
So I remember when Lurie bought the team. Gosh, I remember him coming on the show with Jody and I saying, I'm one of you guys. I like to throw the ball around in the parking lot beforehand. And for the first couple of years, he really tried to do that. He would walk around the tailgates and so on. And then I think he realized, like, this is not a good idea. People are not going to see me as one of the people. It's just you can't. You're the owner. You're not. And he's more been a background guy than a forefront guy.
Mm-hmm.
But my question to you is, after 25 years of Jeff Lurie's ownership, during which time, obviously, they won the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, during which time they've won a lot more games than they've lost, been a very stable franchise, they got the stadium built, they got the practice facility built, they are one of the national leaders when it comes to, you know, sales of merchandise and all that.
Yeah.
Where does Jeff Lurie, I'll ask it this way, where does Jeff Lurie rank to you historically among owners of Philadelphia sports teams? We don't have to go back to Connie Mack.
We don't have to go back to Connie Mack?
No, just, you know, the last 1960s on, kind of, you know, whatever modern era you want to grab.
I don't know. Football is such a different sport that it's hard to compare, like, Jeff Lurie to Ed Snyder or Jeff Lurie to Bill Giles. It's a hard comparison to make. He's certainly the best owner the Eagles have ever had. And at 25 years, he's the longest tenured. Len Toews owned the Eagles, bought them in 69 and sold them in 85.
Mm-hmm.
And then Braman owned them for about 10 years. He bought them in 86 and then sold them
couldn't
about 10 years
Braman.
Later.
Yeah. Gosh, I couldn't stand Braman.
But funny, isn't it? When you remember when Braman bought the team, everybody was thrilled that he bought the team because they were so mad because Leonard Toews wanted to move the team to Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when Norman Braman came in on this big wave of popularity because, oh, my God, he saved the Eagles.
Yeah, it was a short honeymoon.
It was a very short honeymoon. And then Jeff came in, and I think the way you describe it is good. I mean, initially Jeff tried to be kind of the everyman, which, yeah, I mean, with his wealth, he's never going to be the everyman. And initially, if you remember the first couple of years, he and Joe Banner were going to the combine with the stopwatches around their necks.
Yes.
Yeah, and they were working players
out.
Not
good.
And that didn't work
well.
Owners
should never wear a whistle.
That was not a good look. So he's sort of taken that step back. And now you hardly ever see him or hear from him. You know, he does the one big press conference at the opening of training camp, and then you really don't see him again for the rest of the year, which is fine. You know, but I think he's been a very supportive owner. If you look at most of the decisions that he's made in terms of coaches, they've been pretty good. I mean, you know, we all look back at the Chip Kelly thing, and even he admits Chip Kelly probably was a bad decision.
Yeah, but that was a gamble that I think most owners would take.
It was a gamble almost
anybody
would
Nobody at the time said, what the hell is he doing?
No, because their other teams were pursuing him,
right.
And everybody thought it was a coup that he, boy, my God, he got Chip Kelly to come out of college. And look at it, you know, Chip, he was here for 3 years. Two of them, he won 10 games.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously I think he was ill-cast in the NFL. But if you look at it over 25 years, I mean, my goodness, it's been a very successful run. And he did succeed doing the one thing that no other owner has ever done, which is he brought the city a Lombardi trophy.
Yeah. I think overall it's a tremendously – nobody's ever going to love the owner no matter what.
No.
But he's done as well as anybody, and as you say, probably better than none.
Well, they loved him that day at the art museum.
they sure did. I'll never forget that. I got to let you go.
Okay.
You're going to stick around, right? I'll meet you up in the press box to watch a few innings.
I'll be here waiting for you.
There you go. All right, Ray Dinger's taking off. We got Leading Off coming up. If you want to check in, 888-729-9494. You want to talk a little Phils? We'll be right back with that show right here from the NovaCare broadcast booth on 94WIP.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.